You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to Stone Culture, episode 26 of season 2. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. Just one more note, if you're a Texans fan, the three of us just launched our second season of Texans on Tap, the podcast. It's over on our other channel, Sports Map Texans, and available in audio form in all your favorite podcast apps, as is this one. Gents, it was a good news, bad news weekend for Houston. Good in that the pitchforks were put away for Yusei Kikuchi after his 2-run, 11-strikeout debut. Bad news, a lot of the old bad habits from the first couple of months of the season have reared their ugly heads again, except for Yainer Diaz, who seems to be completely unbothered by all of it. And guys, back in 2017, there was a buzz around this team after the Verlander trade was made. It helped energize the team. They felt like they had all the weapons they needed to go to battle. Is this the period that's kind of the antithesis of that? That is to say, is the team a little disappointed by the lack of moves and the state of the team? Or is this just the dog days of summer and we trust that the team can do enough to keep pace with Seattle down the stretch?
This is a grossly inferior team to 2017. Pre-Justin Verlander, the 2017 Astros would have beaten this team like a drum because the 2017 Astros had a big-time lineup top to bottom. The 2024 Astros lineup right now is a big bag of nothing. As constituted, when things are going all right, it's a four-man lineup. Altuve, Bregman, Yordan, Yainer Diaz. From five down, it stinks. Just in terms of the quality of the players, there's going to be ebb and flow, but Jeremy Peña is not a number five hitter in a decent lineup. John Singleton is not an everyday player in any decent lineup. And then you factor in the Myerses and Freefall, and McCormick's been lousy the entire season. You're pinch hitting Trey Cabbage late in games. Mauricio Dubon won the one game with a homer, but he's basically done nothing otherwise for about 2 months now. 5-9, Victor Caratini's their best hope. Credit to Victor Caratini in moderation, but it's just a lousy collection of offensive talent. Then you throw in that the purported heavy lifters right now, they're all 98-pound weaklings. Jose Altuve, 2 for his last 19. Alex Bregman, who's flat out an epic, mediocre player this season, right? He had a hot stretch. Mediocre players have hot stretches. Great players have down stretches. Bregman this season is a below average major league third baseman who happens to be 5 for his last 35. August is Breggy month. 332 career hitter in August. You know, in no other month of his career is he better than 268. Better get August kicking in on this road trip. Bregman 2 for 12 as he's back to weak pop-ups, at least one per game mode. Yordan's hitting for everything but home run power, which is the biggest weapon in his arsenal. A season-long now drought of 12 consecutive games heading to Arlington for Yordan without a homer. But look, the batting average is still around 300. He's getting singles and doubles. He's drawing walks. He still nets out as a positive offensive player lately. And then Yainer cooled a little bit over the weekend because, well, what goes up is going to come down a little bit eventually. Diaz has been spectacular since basically June 1st. But check my math. If 4 out of your 9 spots give you hope for quality production, that's less than half. And if 2 or 3 of those 4 guys are in their own funks, this all adds up to a team that 7 consecutive games failed to score more than 2 earned runs, 7 in a row. And, you know, they didn't face the Smoltz, Maddox, Glavine, Braves rotation against either the Pirates or the Rays. Paul Skenes would fit in there quite nicely, and they managed one earned run against him. But seven consecutive games, not one time more than two earned runs. It's a bad lineup.
It is. And McCormick, of course, that hurts a lot, the drop off from him to this year. And, you know, Pena hasn't really taken that next step. The batting average is better, but we're still seeing him chase pitches out of the zone. But it's the power outage that I'm noticing. Like, Yordan has had one homer in the last month. Like, he had like 3 in 3 days to start July, but we're at August 5th. In the last month, he has one home run. Altuve had one home run in July. So you're talking about your big four and two of those guys. That's two home runs in the last month, basically, out of Altuve and Yordan. It's just not sustainable. Yiner had three bombs in July. Breggy was the best out of all of them with five. But it's just not getting it done. And I'm thinking they're tired. We're not seeing them get to rest the Altuves as much as I think they would like to. Bregman, some of these other guys, they have to win games. They can't afford to be resting them. And that's why we're seeing a lot of these poor performances. Is I think they're a little tired. You'd like to see Altuve maybe DH every now and then just to get him off his feet a little bit, but they just can't do that right now. So it's a problem. The good news is the pitching starting to really show you something. So if the bats can do just enough, you should be okay. But you can't have stuff like over this past weekend where you score one run over two games.
Yordan's 27 years old and DH is a lot. Fatigue should be a zero issue for him. Bregman's just not a very good player, so that he's 30, unless he's absolutely tumbled over the hill, but he is in there every day. He played 161 games last season and was better than this guy. Josh hit on the key one with Altuve, who's still a good player, but his OPS is down more than 100 points from where it was the last 2 years. 795, take out the short gimmicky COVID season when Altuve was just horrible for a number of reasons, but he's having his worst season since 2013. And while he's still a good player, for instance, he doesn't hold a candle to what Ketel Marte is doing, the best second baseman in baseball this year, Arizona Diamondbacks. Early in the year, when the Astros had Kyle Tucker in the lineup every day, they just sucked, right? 7-19, 12-24, rookie manager Joe Espada. I can never take Altuve out. I can never take Altuve. We're chasing the season here. And now without Kyle Tucker, that big trickle down, and Altuve, remember, who had a lousy month of June, he's now off to a very sluggish start in August. I mentioned 2 for his last 19, 69 at-bats without a home run. His last 17 games, 3 doubles, and that's it, an OPS in the 660s. The Astros heading to Arlington, 111 games played. Altuve started 106 of them at second base, DH once, pinch hit once. Said very early in the season at 34 years old, Altuve should be sitting, at least from second base, once per week, spotting Dubon or someone else. And it's tough when you're scuffling and you're trying to stay in the race. And then when Altuve gets hot, you never want to take him out. But penny-wise, pound foolish sometimes. If Altuve is going to fade down the stretch of the season, the Astros lineup is cooked. They have no chance to have a big-time offensive resurgence if Jose Altuve is going to be meh.
And Altuve, and to a different extent, Jeremy Pena, are both kind of streak hitters. Obviously, the ceiling is much higher on Jose Altuve. I'm going to stay away from the home run conversation just because I got skewered in the comments last time when I said that Vlad Jr. could help them add thump to the lineup. And I was told in the comments that that was not a concern.
Look, over the last 2 months, the Astros are 27th in the major leagues in home runs. So if you don't think the lack of power is an issue, wake the freak up.
Also, some good news, bad news from a health standpoint from over the weekend. Good news is that JV seems to be on a definitive track back. He's got another bullpen session, and then he stated he'd need 2 rehab starts and then should be back with the team. Cross our fingers there. Bad news is that Luis Garcia missed a bullpen session with a sore elbow. He's currently not throwing. That doesn't sound good. Neither is Lance McCullers. Joe Espada with the least shocking update of all over the weekend, saying that McCullers likely won't return this season. And lastly was that Kyle Tucker is not expected to be back this month. We'll talk about that more in depth a little later. Another update was Rafael Montero DFA'd. We'll get more into that later as well. I'll allow you, the viewer or listener, to decide which column that update belongs in, whether it's the good or the bad. We did get to see our first look at Pedro Leon this weekend. We also heard from Dana Brown that Shea Whitcomb and Zach DiCenzo will be called up to help with infield depth, specifically for first, to give John Singleton some help there. Guys, what's your concern level here that Houston is relying so heavily on young guys down the stretch?
Well, look, it's not that they're really relying very much on young guys. The one young, the youngest regular in the lineup is Yainer Diaz, who's only been their best hitter now for about 6 weeks. Jeremy Pena is a big disappointment. It's increasingly clear this is who he is, a mediocre starting shortstop. He turns 27 years old next month. He's made basically no overall improvement, batting average slightly. He rarely ever walks again. He's not on pace to draw 30 walks this season. In the Sunday loss, he had three utterly pathetic at-bats where he looked like a broken man. He could not have been worse swinging the bat had he been blindfolded. One pitch after another, sliders in the dirt, 3 feet off the plate. Very, very disappointing. He does not write his own name into the five spot in the lineup. It's not his fault that he's overmatched in quality to be a number five hitter. And I'm not really blaming Joe Espada, because what are the alternatives? It's just that after the four spot, the Astros do not have a credible major league lineup at this point. So if you try Whitcomb or DeCenzo, Zach DeCenzo, a better prospect for me than Joey Loperfido. Joey J, by the way, 9 strikeouts and 18 at-bats to get things going with Toronto. They didn't trade the next Mickey Mantle. Singleton's OPS is in the mid-60s. You know, the batting average, he's shattering all his prior career standards, hitting about 230. Yeah, but the power's gone. He's slugging percentages in the 360s. It's bad. It's better than Abreu. Talk about damning with faint praise. So call up DeCenzo, give him a shot. Shea Whitcomb, huge minor league numbers. But he's the student who was held back a year. In AAA in 2023, he was awful. Yeah, he hit home runs, but his OPS was low. He has cut his strikeouts down this season, 33% of the time a year ago to 23% of the time this year. But the power stats in the PCL, as they were with Loperfido, as they are with everyone in the PCL, they're inflated because of the ballpark environments, as we've talked about here. But you know what? Calling one of them up to at least take platoon at-bats, and frankly, some at-bats against right-handed pitching just to try something different over John Singleton, how's that going to damage the Astros lineup?
It's true. I will point this out. Chandler Rome put out the stats in his column this week of how many starts these guys have actually had at first base in the minors. And DeCenzo has had 19, Whitcomb 1. And we're looking at Loperfido wanting them to put him at first base. He had 59 minor league starts at first base, and they still were reluctant to ever put him at first base. I know he ended
much
up
more athletic than either of these guys.
Yeah. So I'm just like, why all of a sudden would they feel comfortable starting one of these guys at first base when they weren't comfortable letting Loperfido do it with way more experience? I know Dana Brown said he's talking about calling him up and how they need to give Singleton a rest at first base, but the logic just doesn't really line up to me. All of a sudden they're going to feel comfortable starting a guy without any experience at first. I just don't see it. The other one I wanted to point out is in the outfield. As good as Jake Myers has been defensively, he's fallen off with the bat. He's down to 232 for his batting average now. So there's just – I can't blame him for wanting to see Pedro Leon and see what he can do out in the outfield. And Chaz McCormick is just – it's been so bad this year. You feel bad for Chaz. He was a big part. I mean, we were talking about how he had to be in the starting lineup coming into this season, and how last year we were all complaining he wasn't getting enough at bats. He's just fallen off the map for us guys. So they're in a tough spot. I think they're turning to these young guys because they don't really have any better options.
The password is desperation. And the loss of Kyle Tucker for now into the third month, it is significant. Of course, they had their best offensive stretch after Kyle Tucker went down. Sometimes stuff just happens, good or bad, but that can't explain away at all. Right, the Astros have talent deficiencies. The Phillies have played a huge chunk of the season without Trey Turner. Bryce Harper has missed time. Mookie Betts has been out for the Dodgers 2 fewer weeks than Kyle Tucker this season. You should not have your lineup go down the dumper because of the loss of one guy, no matter how good he is. But the Astros lineup right now is down the dumper. But for all the reality of the recent doom and gloom, remember, unless they've changed the rules since we logged on today, it is required that someone wins the American League West. And the Astros are still just one game out, right? For the Sturm and Drang, for all their issues, one game out, because Seattle, while riding its ship, is not exactly the good ship Lollipop. You expect to run off, win 93 games, and go somewhere the Astros have no chance to go. If it takes 90 to win this division, it probably will not be the Astros. But if 87, 88 can get it done, better win that series and the tiebreaker from the Mariners the last week of the regular season, because it is increasingly now appearing it's division title or bust. Right, the Astros are 5 games back of the Royals, who currently hold the number 3 wild card spot. Unless the Astros sweep 4 from Kansas City when the Royals come to town, the Royals win that tiebreaker. The Astros are 1.5, 2 games farther behind Minnesota. They've already lost that tiebreaker to the Twins. They're not even in realistic touch with the Yankees-Orioles runner-up. Well, they've already lost the season series to the Yankees. And they're also behind the Red Sox. So these 2 series upcoming with Boston, absolutely critical on that front. But it does look like either the Astros ultimately successfully defend their American League West championship, or they watch the playoffs in entirety for the first time since 2016.
And getting Kyle Tucker back doesn't necessarily guarantee anything. I mean, it helps with the depth of the lineup for sure. But like we saw a healthy Kyle Tucker give you absolutely nothing during the postseason in 2023. So you can't expect a guy who has sat out and not been able to really do anything for 3 months just to heat it back up. He's an incredible player, so he may be able to do that, but it's not fair to expect him to come back and be the second coming and be able to help buoy this offense getting into the postseason.
But if he went into the lineup in an air cast, he wouldn't give you less than Cabbage and Dubon and McCormick. Myers is going to be safe because of the defense, but that really only floats if Jake Myers is batting 9th, because you have a competent 1-8. The Astros should have a competent 1-4. You get Tucker back 1-5 with the caveats of Altuve gets it going again, and Bregman needs to be better than the guy who some Yahoo over the weekend said the Astros will re-sign Bregman for 7 years, $210 million. I guess anyone can write online these days.
Can we try the aircast scenario? I'd be willing to put in for one of those little knee scooters and then just have him swing and then him just wheel himself around the base. I mean, not real sure. We'll see how it goes. So, Charlie, you tweeted out on Sunday that Kyle Tucker is now on his 3rd month out and is nowhere near returning. Who believes Tucker had or has a leg fracture and the Astros misdiagnosed it and or failed the forthcomingness test? So that went wild on X, because it really strikes a nerve at the media and fan base's distrust in Houston's honesty surrounding the health of their players. So I wanted to ask you guys this. Is there a harm in torpedoing the trust of the fan base, or does it really matter? Do they just need to win?
I think the latter is the most important component of this. As the Astros have scuffled along, I mean, it's not like they're the Marlins or the Rockies, but by Astro-esque standards of most of the last decade, this is bad. So their credibility's taken a hit. The hue and cry over the Kikuchi trade speaks to a general lack of trust of Astros upper management at this point. I think it's also human nature to complain, and when better to complain when things aren't going swimmingly. So, yeah, it was an avalanche of response to that. I do not have a definitive opinion. There are bone bruises that can take 6 months to heal themselves. And it was just not right. But speaking of credibility, the Astros organizationally is not real high in the way they discuss injuries, the way they dissemble or obfuscate or underplay. I don't know, flat out at times have made things up. But from Verlander to Javier, in the past, Altuve will be out a couple of days, and it turns out to be a couple of weeks. I mean, if you want to go organizationally, we can throw in Brandon Taubman. So, you know, that the Astros' word is gospel, it's not exactly a pristine track record there, but winning as deodorant, I'll throw the analogy, I like to get in at least once per year. If your uncle is rich and crazy, he's eccentric. If he's poor and crazy, he's crazy. So the feeling about the Astros for many right now is they're not eccentric.
Who knows with Tucker, right? Like, we don't know. And Charlie's right. If that swelling gets in there and it is just a bone bruise and he can't move around right, that could keep him out a long time. But the Astros, they've lost some credibility because of, you know, the Javier stuff. And, you know, we don't have to get into all that. But I think as far as the mistrust with the organization, I think the thing that upset fans the most was the whole back of the baseball card thing with Abreu that we had to keep listening to over and over again. And you know, once that started happening, that's when the credibility really started going down there. But we'll see. But, you know, we did see it at the trade deadline. People were upset. I wonder if the backlash from that Kikuchi trade is why maybe they didn't go add another bat, because they were like, man, if the fan base is this upset over us trading away these guys, imagine what they're going to do if we give up a bunch more prospects and a deal for a bat. So only Dana Brown really knows the answer to that. But I mean, I think it's fair to question. They're very secretive about this stuff. And I mean, it's been all season long with a bunch of different guys. And it doesn't help that they come out and say McCullers isn't going to pitch this year. You know, that's just another example of, oh, here we go again. You know, oh, he's going to help you down the stretch. Oh, maybe he won't be in the starting rotation, but maybe he can help in the bullpen. And now it's just like, no, it's not going to happen. No McCullers. So at this point, you have to wonder if you're going to see McCullers again. I hope you do. But, you know, the evidence is pretty right in your face right there. It doesn't look good. And Garcia, another hiccup for him. You may not getting that help that you were expecting to get here at the end of the season. And with Garcia, he's got – I don't view him the same way as McCullers, obviously. So you got to think his future is pretty bright, and they want to be smart with him because he could be a, you know, a good starting option for you that doesn't cost you a lot of money for the next several years.
The front office, in my opinion, shouldn't be concerned about the fan reaction if they feel like there's a move to be made. So if Dana Brown is not making a move because he's fearful of the pitchforks, well, that speaks more. I'm more concerned with that than them making it what I would call a questionable trade. But let's talk about Jeff Bagwell, because his name always comes up when there's deals that the fan base is questioning. The Kikuchi thing really hit fever pitch when Dana Brown was shown up in the box with Jeff Bagwell, and the camera caught them two talking. That was on the day the Kikuchi trade was announced. Is it fair? I mean, we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, but the fans have decided that Jeff Bagwell is persona non grata when it comes to the dealings. And obviously, you know, it's because they were tied to other moves, and we're going to get into that a little bit. But what do you think about this fan backlash against Bagwell specifically? Because I see his name get thrown in there probably more than Crane. And Crane runs the team and is the one who signs off on all these big contracts. So no one's making these decisions without his sign off. But it's interesting that gets deflected a little bit and more of the blame goes towards Jeff Bagwell.
The Astros basically have been able to just brutally overpower any criticism with all the relentless winning. And now they're barely over 500. They're only in position to have a decent shot of winning their division because they're in the worst division in baseball. But you play the course. And people like to have targets, assign blame, sometimes throw out wacky conspiracy theories. I mean, look at our presidential race. So, you know, Bagwell, especially as you skew younger, those who never saw him play don't have proper appreciation for Jeff Bagwell's awesome Hall of Fame career. I know, postseason aside, I think he's the pinata that a lot of people think, let's take a swing at him. And you do see him in the booth. I don't think he's filled in now for several weeks on any of the broadcasts. But Jim Crane's gone radio silent and every other kind of silent now for months. So if Bagwell's there, right, we haven't seen Reggie Jackson on a telecast or in the booth recently, right? So I think Bagwell's a convenient target. And I don't say this actually as an indictment of Jeff Bagwell, because it's not like he can say, I'm making this decision or I must be heard on this. But if Jeff Bagwell joined us right now and I said, Jeff, name five Cleveland Guardians, would he do it? I don't know how attuned he is really to the league game in, game out beyond, certainly follows the Houston Astros closely, but in assessing other teams' prospects or major leaguers, I mean, how much had he seen Yusei Kikuchi pitch this season before the Astros traded for him? I don't know. I'm going to guess not a whole lot.
That's fair. I think Bagwell gets a lot of this because he obviously has a lot of pull in the organization. You know, he's the one that started all the back of the baseball card stuff. When Abreu was failing the eye test, anybody that ever watched a baseball game could be like, this guy doesn't belong. And then he goes down to the minors, the complex league, for like five games and doesn't really do hardly anything. And then he's got Joe Espada and all these other people parroting like, oh, we're seeing some big changes and Abreu's looking really good. And, you know, he'll be back up here with the club. And We knew it was nonsense. Then he comes back. He looks like the exact same player. How could he possibly had gotten any better over what the five games that he played down there and against that competition? And then he plays a couple games at Sugarland, doesn't do anything, and he's back in the big leagues. It's the stuff that just your casual fan can point at and be like, this is not right. This is so clearly not the case. When you're just lay fan can see that this guy doesn't really know what he's talking about, or that he's lying to you. But I understand in sports, they can't always tell you the truth. But when you can tell, like, they are throwing some BS at me right here, and they're the ones that are paid and are professionals, they should know more than us. And when your average fan can call out what's wrong with the club better than the people inside the building, that's when it really starts going nuts on social media, because people are just like, this isn't right. This is so clearly not right. Stop blowing this BS in my face.
The sheep will always follow no matter what. But for caring fans, discerning fans, or critical fans or observers, if you insist and look them in the eye, 2 + 2 = 7, you deserve to have your credibility eroded.
Speaking of credibility, we mentioned Rafael Montero being waived over the weekend. He cleared waivers, accepted an assignment to Sugarland. This was the last of those Crane Bagwell contracts that were signed post James Click. Is Crane agreeing to eat those third years on Abreu and Montero sort of an admission by Crane that these were bad deals? And do you think that this was a learning experience for that front office, that they should let a real GM do GM things?
You would hope so on the latter. As for the former, sometimes actions do speak louder than words. And, you know, I don't think there's nobility in finally coming around and, you know, the smelling salts kicked in, whatever, that Abreu was beyond a lost and hopeless cause. Montero, there was zero chance of anyone claiming him on waivers and picking up that contract for the rest of this year and paying him $11.5 million next year. But the Astros are in a very precarious spot going forward, given the thin minor league system and an expensive top-heavy major league roster, which is going to include $48 million of nothing next year. $19.5 million Abreu, $11.5 million Montero, and I personally would guess that Lance McCullers is finished. Certainly only a moron would count on him. Only a dreamer, and it's nice to dream, would think that McCullers can come back and become a real factor. So that's another $17 million. That's $48 million all on the books. All count. Every dollar counts toward the competitive balance tax next year, which with the first threshold is $241 million. Accounting $48 million of dead weight, the Astros are at about $220 million without a first baseman, without a third baseman, back end of the bullpen spots, because Altuve gets a raise next year, right? He goes to $25 million as he may well be entering the decline phase of his career. Yordan is over $19 million. Josh Hader is $19.5 million. Ryan Pressly now is $14 million. Kyle Tucker, Framber Valdez, unless the Astros are going to really do a retool and shop those guys, they're going up to the $18 to $20 million range in salary arbitration. Jim Crane is going to have some reckoning to do this offseason in terms of talent and payroll structure for this roster 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, I think with Montero, it's just to the point where they can only use him in mop-up duty, and it was just a numbers game. Like, we got to get somebody in here that we can actually put in the game and we have any kind of confidence that he can get somebody out. That was the problem with Montero also, is even when he was pitching well, it was between the ears often with him, where in really big leverage moments, he wouldn't come through, or he just, you know, right down middle with the fastball. So it's not just the ability, because the stuff was good, you know, mid 90s and, you know, some good breaking stuff, but it's just when you needed him to come through, you never felt good about putting him in a game. And it got to the point where a spot is like, I only use this guy when the game's pretty much out of hand. So I think they had to move on from him. It's, you can't just have somebody that you can't ever trust or ever use. So I think definitely that I think Crane is looking around a little bit and seeing like, yeah, maybe our great baseball men and Reggie Jackson talked about how they scoffed at the Blake Snell deal. Maybe they are starting to be like, okay, you know, maybe we've made some mistakes. We need to look at how we do things a little more closely. And I wonder if he gave him truth serum, would they do the Josh Hader deal again after what we've seen this year?
Only if they're foolish.
Right. I would hope not. And also not signing Lorenzen. You had Jordan Montgomery out there that they didn't sign. And granted, I know Montgomery hasn't had the best season, but Lorenzen could have been a value deal for you, and you really need the help. We don't know how much of Dana Brown saying that they were satisfied with who they had. Obviously, they couldn't have foreseen the avalanche of injuries, but we don't know how much of Dana Brown saying that they were satisfied with who they have was him actually believing that, and how much was actually cover fire for his inability to do things because of being given a budget and having budgetary constraints. Charlie, you mentioned $48 million of dead money going into 2025. There is no hard cap. If Dana Brown gets handcuffed by that dead money, will fans blame that on Brown, or are they going to assign that to Crane?
There'll be an unhealthy mix there when you're the general manager and you're the front man facing the media, the conduit to the fans every day. But those who can at least be realistic and discerning that obviously it's not all on Dana Brown. If you're given, nickels and dimes to work with and go upgrade our roster by dollars worth of talent, it's a challenging spot. And why the down phase of this era is upon us doesn't mean they need to sink to the depths of 2011, 2012, 2013 again. And as discussed here previously, right, unless the Mariners really fortify their offense, and they have some real talented offensive players in their pipeline, but more in the lower minors, unless they're rapid risers, shouldn't be factors next year, maybe come 2026, there isn't a franchise within this division that you're feeling we're going to be lapped in no time. Whereas if the Astros were in the National League West with the Dodgers, the National League East with the Phillies and the Braves, the Yankees, the Orioles, and the American League East. But remember, the Astros are carrying the third highest payroll in Major League Baseball this year. So it's not that they've been skinflinty, but if you're going to do a reset and you're going to shed some payroll, how far are they going to go? And shopping Tucker and Fromber would be exhibits A and B on that this offseason. And Kyle Tucker, with all the shin stuff, geez, I mean, he's got what, $200 million plus riding on recovery and performance. Doesn't have to be this season for him. He has all next year to ramp back up ahead of free agency. But geez, if he doesn't make it back this season, it doesn't exactly pump up his trade value.
Yeah, and then more money on the books for next year. You know, Ryan Pressly, his option vested for next season. So he's going to be on the books, and he's been pretty good for you, especially lately. But you can expect him to be back. Unless he finishes the season injured or something like that, he'll be back with the club next year. So that's more money that they're not going to have to spend. But it seems like that's where Crane likes to spend his money, is in the bullpen on pitching. So it'll be interesting. It's Verlander's probably not back next year. You wonder how this rotation is going to look. Hunter Brown, can he keep being as good as he's been? So they'll have their hands full next year. But Charlie's right. Nobody's running away in this division. So pitching's usually a good spot. If you're not going to score a ton of runs, if you can keep the other team from scoring, you're going to be in a lot of ball games.
That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cultures. If you listen on podcast and you enjoy the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week. But you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston Sports Fix, because all you have to do is subscribe to Sports Map Houston and Sports Map Texans on YouTube, and we'll have more content for you during the week, including a live post-game reaction to the first official preseason Texans game against the Steelers. Thanks for listening. Until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.